I'm going to ask you to turn with me to the book of Ecclesiastes. Book of Ecclesiastes. You know, life presents for us a lot of difficult quandaries, a lot of perplexities of life that leave us baffled, leave us confused, that leave us often just bewildered. Why is this happening? Why is this like this? Why are things the way that they are? These perplexities in life not only have to do with things that take place in the world at large that kind of affect a multitude of people, but also perplexities and confusions surrounding the very things that take place in our own life as well. We wonder, why is this happening? Why did this take place? And sometimes these perplexities leave us very confused, really even about life itself. Why are we here? Why do things happen the way that they do? You know, we don't have to look very far before we are faced with some of these perplexities that man faces in this world. Events that have been front page headlines over the last few weeks really provide for us a good starting place when considering some of the difficult perplexities that we are faced with while on the earth, and the difficult, seemingly unanswerable questions that often follow these perplexities, such as, why do some people live long lives while others live relatively short ones, like children dying in the womb, or simply trying to cross the street to go to school, or picking up trash on the side of a country highway? Why would some lose their life while trying to enjoy it, in the case of the shooting this past week, by someone who apparently didn't enjoy life at all? Why are some countries poor and operated by unjust governments, leading to its citizens to have a desire to abandon all that they know, to abandon their homes, and to leave for a hope somewhere else? Why are there natural disasters that come through a town and take one person's life but yet spare someone else? What allowed that person to live and that person not to? This list of difficult perplexities that are raised by problems in the world, we could spend all day talking about the various ones that we face and the ones that we are challenged with. Because such perplexities and quandaries not only permeate the landscape of the world in which we live, but these difficulties also find their way into the very fabric of our personal lives in a way that are unescapable. When it thinks about the things in our own personal life, we think, why are some plagued with physical disease and physical disabilities, while others are not? Why do husbands and wives who long for children to love and to raise struggle to have them, only to see countless others who can have them abort them and not care anything for them? It doesn't seem right in the world. Why do good things happen to bad people? That's the one we always hear. Why do bad things happen to good people? Kind of the other side of the same coin. Why do the specific difficulties that I face in this life fall upon me and not someone else? Why did I have the past that I had that has led to the circumstances and the trials that I am facing today? Why couldn't things have just happened a little bit differently that would have shaped my future a little bit better, a little more promising? Why are things in life the way that they are? And why is my life the way that it is? That's the life that we live. Life that leaves us with a lot of difficult quandaries, perplexities, leaving us baffled, confused, and bewildered. And asking the question, why? Why does it happen? Why is it as it is? Well, for some, to answer that question, they give themselves over to finding solutions and answers to these perplexities of life through human wisdom, apart from divine wisdom, human wisdom that trumps the wisdom of God, while others simply live life as it is. Just thinking, you know what? They're out there. The why questions are out there, but I'm just not going to give them any consideration. I'm just going to live it up and enjoy it while I can. And that's the two approaches. Well, Solomon was a man who pursued both. He gave himself over to trying to find solutions and answers to the purposes of life and the perplexities of life through careful and diligent investigation, but yet it was apart from the wisdom of God. He pursued human wisdom to try to figure out such perplexities and such quandaries of life. And when that left him unsatisfied, he pursued a life of folly, living life as it is, without giving any serious consideration to God or to life or the perplexities man faces in this world. So friend, where do you find yourself this morning? How do you handle the perplexities of life? Do you try to find answers to these perplexities that you're faced with or that the world is faced with apart from the divine wisdom that is found within the pages of Scripture? Or have you conceded that you can't really resolve such dilemmas? They're kind of out of your hand. You don't really have the power to change them. So you're just going to live it up. Just going to pursue life without ever giving any serious consideration to the things that you should. Well, Solomon tells us both those pursuits, the pursuit of human wisdom and the pursuit of folly, are both futile. It's like chasing after the wind, he says. Futile, they are ceaseless, and they are frustrating. And listen to what he confesses to us about this, beginning in verse 12 of chapter 1. He says, I, the preacher, have been king over Israel and Jerusalem, and I applied my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. It is an unhappy business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. I have seen everything that is done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and a striving after the wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be counted. I said in my heart, I have acquired great wisdom, surpassing all who were over Jerusalem before me, and my heart has had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I applied my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is but a striving after wind. For in much wisdom is much vexation, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. As we saw last time in verses 1 through 11, Solomon recalls for us his conclusion to life and all that man does under the sun. In many ways, you could call this passage in verses 1 through 11, as well as much of Ecclesiastes, his confession of his sinful behavior. It is his confession of his sinful attitude and practices, of his wanting to seek satisfaction and meaning of life apart from God. As he sought pleasure and satisfaction in this life apart from God, he had concluded, as we mentioned last week, verse 2 of chapter 1, that all is vanity. It is meaningless, it is wearisome, it is empty. And that man gains nothing from all his activity that he does under the sun. And that is, what man does here really doesn't change anything. It doesn't satisfy, and it will soon be forgotten anyways. And verses 1 through 11 are really the summation of his vain pursuits, the individual pursuits that he pursued. Beginning in verse 12, really all the way through verse 26 of chapter 2, he confesses to us those individual pursuits. Verses 1 through 11 is the conclusion to all of them. This particular section begins to deal with the individual pursuits that he embarked on. Pursuits that didn't satisfy him, pursuits that disappointed him, leading him to the conclusion that he gave in verses 1 through 11, that all is vanity and man gains nothing. In these individual pursuits that he embarked on, he sought pleasure and satisfaction in pursuing wisdom, and pleasure, and folly, and gain, and power. But as we'll see, both individually and collectively, these pursuits left him empty, they left him unsatisfied, and they left him weary from such futile and frustrating pursuits. 8 times in this section of Scripture, from verse 12 all the way through verse 26 of chapter 2, he refers to man's endeavors under the sun as vanity. That is, they are empty and weary. No matter what the pursuit is, no matter what man gives himself to apart from God, it will leave him weary and frustrating. And 5 times in this section, he refers to man's endeavors as to chasing after the wind. That is, they are futile, they are ceaseless, they are frustrating. Even if we were able to grab it somehow, it would just slip through our fingertips, and it's gone completely. And at the end of the section, we do thankfully begin to see a change take place in Solomon's heart, where he begins to see that apart from God, man, no matter how hard he tries, no matter what he pursues, no matter what he gives himself to, apart from God, he cannot truly enjoy life. Look what he says in verse 24 of chapter 2. He says, "There is nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. This also I saw is from the hand of God. For apart from him, who can eat? Or who can find or have enjoyment?" Friend, understand, life is to be enjoyed. It is to be enjoyed. Even with all of its hardships that we face, even with all the perplexities that we face, life is to be enjoyed because it is a gift given to us by the hand of God. But friends, you will never truly enjoy it apart from Him and in living obedience to Him through Jesus Christ. There may be the moments of temporary pleasure, but there may be moments of temporary satisfaction, but those won't last forever. And like they did for Solomon, those moments will leave you empty, those moments will leave you weary, as if you've spent your days chasing after the prairie winds. And Solomon, like so many of us, tried the weary and the futile pursuit to try to find enjoyment in this life apart from God, only to be disappointed time and time and time again. We see here in verses 12 through 18 one of those pursuits, one of those individual pursuits that he embarked on for satisfaction in life, to understand meaning, something that might give him some peace, some closure to why he was here. We see that his satisfaction in life was his attempt to determine how to handle life's toughest questions and perplexities. Understanding them, maybe that's the way to go. Maybe that's how you handle them, or maybe you just simply ignore them. Maybe that's the route to take as well. He had determined that if he could just find out why things are the way they are, if he could just find out why there are these perplexities, how we might be able to solve them, why things happen the way they do on the earth, why man does what he does on the earth, then maybe those answers will finally bring him the satisfaction that he's longing for. Maybe that will cause him to see that all is not vanity, and that man's toil actually does gain something while he's here on the earth. In essence, he is saying, maybe the best way to enjoy life is to know why it is as it is. Maybe that's how I can really figure out why I'm missing something in life. I just don't know enough. I don't understand things enough. Basically, he thought the more one knows, the better off one will be. But when that approach failed, he turned to simply ignoring the difficulties and perplexities of life, thinking that, well, maybe if knowing them doesn't really seem to bring me any satisfaction, then maybe the best way to handle it is just not care about them at all, to just live as if they don't matter, to live as if they have no significance in life, to just give myself to folly. He did that only to see that approach as being futile as well. Now, there's much that we can learn from Solomon's pursuit of both folly and or wisdom and madness. Number one, we can learn from Solomon's pursuit of wisdom. Number two, we can learn from Solomon's pursuit of madness. Number three, we can learn from Solomon's pedigree. And no, I'm not referring to his dog food. Number one, we can learn from Solomon's pursuit of wisdom, verses 13 through 15. At the beginning of verse 13, we see that Solomon has devoted his entire being, all of his will, all of his intellect, all of his emotions, to examining all that's done under the sun. He says at the beginning of verse 13, "And I applied my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven." Now, his searching all that is done under heaven, I mean, it's a pretty exhaustive study. That would have included such things as the meaning of life. Why is he here upon the earth? Why is anyone upon the earth? Why do things function the way that they do? Why do certain things happen to some people and not others? Why do certain things happen at all? And on down the line. But as you study the context and as you understand what he says here, it seems that he's really especially concerned about the perplexities of life and trying to understand why those things are the way they are. The issues of life that seem like they should be one way, it should happen this way, but it actually seems to happen completely different. It's not always as it seems. Issues such as a child dying at a young age. One would think that a child should be able to live a long life. Why is it that a child dies young? Or why do wildfires that sweep across the land appear to burn everything in its sight and to burn everyone, doesn't spare anybody's lives, only to see the smoke clear and realize that some structures were spared and some people's lives were spared? So this isn't right. It shouldn't be that way. Why is it that way? These perplexities of life that Solomon describes here in verse 15, is they're being crooked and they're unable to be straightened. These things should be straight. A child should be able to live a long life. Wildfire should burn everything in its path, sparing nothing and sparing no one. But he's saying here, something has bent the way. Something has made things different than what they should be, keeping them from what they should. And he wants to know, why is it that way? He pursues human wisdom to try to find that out. He wants to know and he wants to understand the perplexities of life, why things are the way they are, and why is man plagued with them? And as we get to the end of this, you'll see this was kind of back and forth for Solomon. On one hand, this was a very commendable search. That's a noble thing to find out why things are the way they are. Because as we'll see shortly, there are some that don't give themselves to such weighty issues as they should. So this is a very commendable search that Solomon is on. And we see here that his search for understanding the perplexities of life was a very thorough and extensive and intellectual pursuit. He's going to give it all he's got. I'm going to figure this out the best I can, and I'm going to pour all of my human wisdom and resources into trying to figure these things out. He says in verse 13 that he tells us that he studied and searched out by wisdom all that is done under the heavens. He says, I gave myself to these things. He poured his heart into research. He poured his heart into human reasoning in order to determine why things are the way they are. And all his study, all his research, and all his intellectual pursuits and all his human wisdom left him to conclude, the middle of verse 13, it is an unhappy business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. He said, I have seen everything that is done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity, and it is a striving after the wind. Solomon, through all of his investigation of all the things that take place under the heavens, through all of his intensive research and dissecting of all the issues of life and trying to determine why things happen the way they do and to whom they do, he came to the conclusion, this is a wearisome and this is a futile pursuit. I can't figure it out. He argues that regardless of how much wisdom one applies to the perplexities of life, some things cannot be made right. And some things we will never fully understand. He says in verse 15, this proverb that he gives for us, what is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be counted. This proverb in verse 15 is basically a summation of his pursuit of wisdom and trying to find out why things happen the way they do through human wisdom. His quest for understanding has left him weary. He concludes that there are some things in life that no matter how much studying you give to it, no matter how much research you apply to it, no matter how much wisdom you apply to something, you will never fix it. He says, what is crooked cannot be made straight. You know, all the research we pour into something, all the measures that we take to try to guarantee that a young child will never die again, or that injustices will never happen in the world, or that natural disasters could be avoided, or that individuals won't be born with disabilities or won't come down with diseases. He says, listen, you can pour all the research into that, but some perplexities of life will never change. There still will be people who come down with diseases. There still will be children who die. There still will be injustices in the world, no matter how much wisdom we apply to such things. And he also concludes that there are some things in life that we're never going to fully understand anyways. No matter how much wisdom you try to apply to the situation, you're never going to understand it completely anyways. He says, because we don't have all the information in life to properly assess everything that is taking place and everything that's going on. He says there in that proverb, verse 15, what is lacking cannot be counted. You can't count what's not there. You can't assess the information if it's not given to you, to see how that might factor into the things of life and how that may play into why this happened and why it didn't happen. In the conclusion of verse 15 is simply to say that the information that is needed to fully understand life, the information that is needed to fully understand the perplexities of life that man faces, is not revealed to us. We don't have it all. We can't take in what we don't have revealed to us. You understand, some things God has chosen never to reveal to us. It says in Deuteronomy 29:29, the secret things belong to the Lord our God, but the things that are revealed belong to us and to our children forever, that we may do all the words of his law. You understand, God in his infinite wisdom has chosen not to reveal certain things to us, and we can't properly assess what he has not chosen to reveal to us. And Solomon has pursued human wisdom. He's given it all his guide. He's poured all of his research into it, thinking that it will provide him with the satisfactory answers to life. And the perplexities only to conclude, my search was weary and futile. I'm no better off than when I started. Some things cannot be made right, and some things we will never know. Why is it that way? Why is it this way, Solomon? He tells us that too. The reason life is this way is because of the fall of man into sin. You know, when Adam sinned against God in the garden, the curse of sin fell upon man and fell upon all of creation. Listen to what God tells Adam in Genesis chapter 3, verse 17. Adam had just sinned, and God tells him, cursed is the ground because of you, because of your actions. In pain you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Cursed is the ground, and your life is going to be one of pain. Now listen to what Solomon says here at the end of verse 13. It is an unhappy business that God has given to the children of man, or the children of Adam, to be busy with. You understand, friend, that Adam's disobedience to God has plunged man under the curse of sin and death, leaving him to face a life of misery, turmoil, hardships, and heartache. Facing things in life we cannot change, and facing things in life we will fully never understand to begin with. And Solomon is saying, you can't learn by human wisdom. Human wisdom will leave you weary, and it is a futile pursuit. So what can we learn from Solomon? What can we learn from Solomon's pursuit of wisdom? Well, number one, some things we will never fully know, so trust him in the things that you do know. Some things we will never fully know, so trust him in the things that we do know. You know, friend, life presents each of us with difficulties and perplexities. And no matter how much wisdom we apply to those situations, no matter how much wisdom we give to those issues, there are things that we're just never going to completely understand. Why they happen the way they are? Why did they fall upon us? And the reason that is because God has chosen not to reveal all things to us. In his infinite wisdom, he has chosen not to reveal certain things to us. But he has chosen to reveal himself. And he has chosen to reveal his wisdom through his word. And he has revealed to us in his word that he is a good God, that he's full of love and compassion and mercy and grace, that he's infinitely wise, that he's infinitely holy, that he's infinitely just. And when human wisdom leaves us chasing the wind, we are to rest in the wisdom and the character of God that's been revealed to us in his word. God's wisdom, as Danny pointed out to us this morning in our reading of Scripture. Proverbs 3:24. Listen to what God's wisdom provides for us. It says, if you live by it, if you lie down, you will not be afraid. When you lie down, your sleep will be rest. Man's wisdom doesn't offer that. The second thing we can learn from Solomon's pursuit of wisdom is that the wisdom of man will never undo the effects of the fall. The wisdom of man will never undo the effects of the fall. No matter how well-intended man may be, and no matter how much research we pour into something, trying to solve problems, trying to fix the issues of life, man's wisdom will never undo the effects of the fall. Pain, misery, injustice, hate, evil, racism, greed, lust, immorality, murder, anger, oppression, etc., 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 etc. You understand, man's wisdom has no sufficient answer to completely eradicate the effects of the fall upon man. And Solomon will later tell us in Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 13, he says, consider the work of God. Who can make straight what he has made crooked? And the curse of sin and the curse of death upon mankind is God's judgment against man because of his sin. A judgment that man cannot undo by his own wisdom, no matter how much research you pour into it. And Paul alludes to this in 1 Corinthians chapter 1. He says in verse 20, where is the one who is wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the debater of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since in the wisdom of God, the world did not know God through wisdom, it pleased God through the folly of what we preach to save those who believe. Understand, by God's design, human wisdom is not the answer to man's problems. The only hope for a fallen world is the gospel of Jesus Christ. That Christ lived a sinless life and died as a substitute for sinners. That he was buried and on the third day rose from the dead, conquering sin and death, offering all to him who will turn to him in faith the gift of eternal life and the victory over sin. It is Christ, friend, and Christ alone who can sufficiently give to man the power to put the old man to death along with his practices. Man's wisdom will never be able to accomplish that, no matter how much we pursue it, no matter how much we pour into it. We see here that Solomon pursued human wisdom, a pursuit that he found to be weary and futile. Number two, we also learn from Solomon's pursuit of madness. We learn from Solomon's pursuit of madness. In verses 13 through 15, Solomon sought to find answers about life, the meaning of life, the perplexities of life, and he determined to find those answers and that understanding through human wisdom. I'll just pour a little more research. I'll give careful study to it. I'll be diligent. But he says that was an empty and futile search. In verses 17 and 18, Solomon really takes the other path. Rather than trying to find answers to such issues, maybe the best thing to do might be just to live life as it is and take it as it comes. I'm just not going to care about these things. I can't solve them. I can't fix them. I can't understand them. So I'm just not going to care about them. It says, beginning of verse 17, and I applied my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. Like his previous pursuit, this pursuit too would consume him. I'm going to go all in. If I can do it, if anybody can do it, I will do it. I will pursue folly with all of my heart, with all of my emotions, with all of my will. I'm going to pour myself into this. He's devoted to knowing all that he can about madness and folly. Synonyms that basically speak of man's living for self. Psalm is like, I pursued wisdom. It didn't help. I couldn't understand things. Some things can't be changed. Some things we'll never know. So maybe the best thing in life is just to live it up. And I'm just going to pour myself into that. I'm going to care little about the important things of life. And basically, I'm going to live as if there is no God. As David says in Psalm 14:1, the fool says in his heart, there is no God. A life of folly is just living as if there is no God. And Solomon says, that's what I'm going to try. Maybe I can really understand why life is the way that it is by understanding why people do that, why they don't care, why they don't seem to have any regard for the serious things of life. You understand, Solomon is not denying here that God exists in his pursuit of madness and folly. But he just wants to see what life is like on that side of the aisle, on that side of the proverbial coin of life. There's a wisdom walk and there's a folly walk. He said, I tried wisdom, it didn't help, so I might as well try folly and see what it has to offer. He thinks that maybe I can learn something from those who don't care about anything in life. Maybe I can gain something that will help me understand why things are the way they are, because these people don't seem to care about it, so I want to know, why is it that they don't care about it? Maybe you can learn something from those who live as if there is no God. It's like playing with fire to see if it really burns. And while his pursuit for wisdom was somewhat noble and somewhat commendable because of the research that he was pouring into it and the things that he was investigating, giving serious consideration to the weighty things of life, his pursuit of madness and folly was anything but noble and commendable. And that's really demonstrated by the fact that he says relatively nothing about it. He doesn't give us any detail. He doesn't give us any insights into what it was like other than just say, that was futile. That was empty. That was like chasing after the wind. He says it there in verse 17. I perceive that this also is but a striving after the wind. He's like, I've lived life and it was empty. It was futile. I lived life with no consideration of the important things of life. I lived life as if there was no God, like chasing the noonday winds, and it was futile, it was frustrating, it was purposeless, and I really don't have much to say about it, because that's how futile it was, and how empty it was. Really, his conclusion here that everything is just like striving after the wind, this life of folly where you give no consideration to the weighty issues of life, you give no consideration to God. He says this really is like it's living this way where you just pursue folly. Makes the dog chasing his tail seem to have more wisdom than you got. Because at least the dog can grab something. At least the dog can finally latch onto something. A chasing a life of folly, you gain nothing, he says. And the reason he was such perplexed, the reason he had this perception about folly, is because the search brought frustration, pain, and sorrow, as he points out to us in verse 18. He says, for in much wisdom is much vexation, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. And he concludes, listen, I pursued wisdom. It didn't pay off. I pursued madness and folly, and the information that I have gained from both pursuits has left me frustrated. Because the world just doesn't seem to make sense. This doesn't add up. Life is miserable. And some pursue wisdom, he says, and they gain nothing from it. While others pursue folly, living for themselves, only to suffer the same fate. The wisdom I've gained from these pursuits has left me in a quandary because it just doesn't seem to add up why things are the way they are. The more I learned, he says, the more my sorrow increased. Because those who give themselves to things that they should, doesn't pay off because they do it through human wisdom, and that those who decide not to, it doesn't pay off for them as well, leaving them futile, weary. So this is just miserable. This is sorrow. If this is the way life is, then it is true that all is vanity. And man gains nothing by his toil under the sun. And Solomon pursued folly to no avail. And like wisdom, it had left him weary and frustrated with life. Now, he doesn't say much about his pursuit of folly, but there is much that we can learn from it. Number one, we can learn that sin or folly is never to be experimented with. It is never to be experimented with. Friend, no matter what your reasons may be, no matter how noble you think, you know, if I just play along with it, I'll just tamper with it just a little bit. Sin is never to be something to experiment with. Never to be, well, I just want to see what it's like. I just want to see if maybe what the big rave is, what the big craze is about it. God's people are called to live holy and to live with wisdom. and the pursuit of folly, no matter what your reasons for, will leave you and drag you away from the seriousness of life and will drag us away from God. You understand? You notice here, despite Solomon's intentions, well, I'm really just wanting to find out what life is like, why people do that, I just want to know. You see, God never commends him for that pursuit. He never tells him that it's okay. He'll never give us the okay on that either. So we learn that sin and folly is not to be experimented with. Number two, we learn that while ignorance may be bliss, it is not wise. And some may never give any serious consideration to the issues and perplexities of life. You may know some of those people, maybe family members, maybe classmates, maybe friends, maybe co-workers. You say, I don't pay attention to stuff like that. I don't get wrapped up in those types of things. It really isn't going to change anything. Life doesn't, you know, I'm just going to live here and try to enjoy life the best I can. Determining why things are the way they are. You should understand, ignoring them does not make them go away and does not negate how important they are. The perplexities of life, like life itself, Solomon says here in verse 13, they've been given to us by God because of the fall. And they've been given by him to us to contemplate and to consider why things are the way they are, with the hopes that we will seek him and turn to him and know him. To ignore them is not only foolish, but Solomon said it's futile and it's weary and it may be fatal. Number three, we can learn that we need to be careful that we don't become like those who pursue folly. And be careful that you don't become like those who pursue folly. This evening or tomorrow or the next day, eventually you're going to come across another tragedy of life on the news, in the newspaper, on the radio, online. You're going to read about or hear about an injustice in the world. You're going to read about or hear about a brutal murder, a life taken too soon, a natural disaster wrecking havoc in the world. We hear those things so often that we often don't even take consideration about them anymore. Unless they directly involve us somehow, we just turn off the news and we go on about our business without giving any serious consideration to those types of issues that happen in life. And friend, those things are reminders to us of the fall of man. And they're reminders to us of the effects that the fall has upon the earth. And it reminds us of the glorious redemption that we have in Christ. If we begin to see those things as man sees them, just happens. I'm used to it. We give little to no serious consideration to them. It won't be long before we see Christ and his redemption in the same manner. It doesn't really mean anything. If we don't really see the seriousness of what sin does, how can we really understand the glories of what Christ's salvation brings to us? So be careful that you don't see folly, see the perplexities of life like folly does. So Solomon pursued wisdom, it left him weary and futile. He pursued madness, that too was weary and futile. Number three, what can we learn from Solomon's pedigree? What can we learn from Solomon about who he was? He tells us in verse 12, I, the preacher, have been king over Israel in Jerusalem. And then in verse 16, he says, I said in my heart, I have acquired great wisdom, surpassing all who were over Jerusalem before me, and my heart has had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. Now, why are these things important? What do they contribute to our understanding of his pursuit of wisdom and folly? You understand, they are simply given to us to point out that to those who would hear him and who would read his words, that if any man on the face of the earth would be able to find satisfaction in life through wisdom or through folly, it would have been Solomon. It would have been Solomon. His position as king over Israel would allow him the wealth and the freedom to pursue folly and all that it offers to the nth degree. I've got the wealth. I've got the wisdom. I've got the resources. I can do whatever I please. I can pursue folly to the fullest. And the wisdom that he had been given by God would have been the highest form of human wisdom man has ever seen. Completely adequate for pursuing satisfaction through wisdom, if that was possible. Look at 1 Kings chapter 4 for a moment. Turn to 1 Kings chapter 4. Here we get a picture of Solomon's, a description of Solomon's wealth and wisdom. 1 Kings chapter 4. Starting in verse 22, Solomon's provision for one day was 30 cores of fine flour and 60 cores of meal, 10 fat oxen and 20 pasture-fed cattle, 100 sheep, besides deer, gazelles, roebucks, and fattened fowl. Again, that was for one day. For he had dominion over all the region west of the Euphrates, from Tifshah to Gaza, over all the kings west of the Euphrates, and he had peace on all sides around him. Everything was good. Life was good for Solomon. Verse 25. And Judah and Israel lived in safety from Dan even to Beersheba, every man under his vine and under his fig tree, all the days of Solomon. Solomon also had 40,000 stalls of horses for his chariots and 12,000 horsemen. And those officers supplied provisions for King Solomon and for all who came to King Solomon's table, each one in his month. They let nothing be lacking. Barley also and straw for the horses and swift steeds they brought to the place where they was required, each according to his duty. And God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding beyond measure and breadth of mind like the sand on the seashore, so that Solomon's wisdom surpassed the wisdom of all the people of the east and all the wisdom of Egypt. For he was wiser than all other men, wiser than Ethan the Ezraite and Haman and Calcol and Darda, the sons of Mahol, and his fame was in all the surrounding nations. He also spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005. He spoke of trees from the cedar that is in Lebanon to the hyssop that grows out of the wall. He spoke also of beasts and of birds and of reptiles and of fish, and of people of all nations came to hear the wisdom of Solomon from all the kings of the earth who had heard of his wisdom. If there was ever a man to be able to pursue satisfaction in life through wisdom and through wealth, it would have been Solomon. But yet we see his account in Ecclesiastes, neither left me satisfied. It only left me weary, frustrated, and confused. With all his wisdom, he still concluded there are some things man can never change, and there are some things man will never know. So man's pursuit of wisdom apart from God is weary and futile. And yet, with all of his wealth and freedom, he still concluded that a life of folly is like chasing after the wind. If I could have done it, I would have done it. And I had the wealth to do it, and I had the freedom to do it, and I could have pursued everything this world offers, and I did, and it left me empty. It did nothing but heap more sorrow on an already sorrowful heart, he says. So what can we learn from his pedigree? Well, just one thing, really. Don't be deceived. Don't be deceived. We live in a culture and a world that often thinks that money and wisdom will solve all of life's problems and perplexities. From a nation's treasury to an individual's bank account, we think that if we just had more, it would go a long way to fixing man's problems in life, problems that he faces, and that will allow man the things that he really needs so that he can really find satisfaction in this life and provide him the satisfaction that he's longing for. If we just pour a little more research into it, if we just educate the people a little better, if we debate it amongst ourselves a little more, then surely, eventually, we're going to come to find the answers that will solve all of the perplexities and problems of life and will make this place a happier world. Now, please hear me out, or more importantly, hear what Solomon is not saying here and what he actually is saying. He's not saying that money is not important. And he's not saying that human wisdom is not important. In all the days I spent at the iron shop, every time I told them I was going to the doctor or going to the dentist, they'd say, oh, we could take care of that for you. And I thought, no, you can't. I don't want your solution to all things is to be cut it off with a blowtorch. If somebody's going to operate on me, I want somebody with wisdom. Solomon is not saying that wisdom is not important. He is not saying that money is not important. They both have their place in this world. But what he is saying, and what we need to understand, is that money and wisdom, apart from God, will lead you on a weary and futile quest to nowhere. And to take his word for it, because he gave it up. He gave all to do this. I pursued wisdom. I pursued human wisdom to try to find the perplexities of life. It left me empty. I pursued folly, thinking, well, maybe the best thing to do in life is just not care about those things. And he says, that was foolish too. Life presents us with a lot of difficult quandaries and perplexities, things that leave us baffled and confused. Why is it this way? Why do things happen the way that they do? What can we do to solve them? Always asking the question of why. He warns us, don't pursue human wisdom to try to solve those problems. And he also warns them that you just can't simply ignore them either. Human wisdom doesn't solve them. Ignoring them doesn't solve them. So what are we to do? Well, like last week, Solomon tells us that too. Not here in the book of Ecclesiastes, but in the book of Proverbs. Flip over with me to Proverbs chapter 3 real quick. Proverbs chapter 3. We're not to pursue human wisdom. We're not to pursue folly. So how do we handle the perplexities of life? How do we live amongst all these difficulties that we face? Chapter 3 of Proverbs, verses 5 and 8, Solomon offers us this. Trust in the Lord. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. And do not lean on your own understanding. Don't you see here, understanding the passage of Ecclesiastes, the context of Ecclesiastes, I tried my own understanding. That was futile. Don't lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him. There you see the life of folly. I lived as if there was no God. That was futile as well. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will make straight your paths. Be not wise in your own eyes, his own human wisdom again. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. You see the pursuit of folly. If you will live by his wisdom, he says, verse 8, it will be healing to your flesh and refreshment to your bones. In verse 18, he says, listen, man's wisdom, man's understanding, man's pursuit of folly has brought sorrow upon sorrow, while God's wisdom brings healing to our flesh and refreshments to our bones. So what are we to do? We flee man's wisdom, we flee man's folly, and we pursue the wisdom of God. Let's pray.